Welcome, everyone, to the Space Game Junkie podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
Hey.
Jim.
Perfect.
Hi there. That's like the moment my wife decides to walk in and give me the stink eye, and I don't even know why. So, apparently I did something.
What's your wife's name again?
Joan.
What's your wife's name? Hi, Joan. I almost said Jill.
Hi, Joan.
Hi, everyone. I'm half asleep because I'm going to be honest. I was very excited to talk to our guest tonight and play this game, and I didn't get any sleep last night because I was up going, "Ooh, this is so exciting." so I'm a little loopy. But we have guests. We have multiple guests tonight joining us from. Oh shit! Where are you guys? Where are you? Where are you?
I'm in Seattle. This is Travis, and Eric's down in San Francisco.
Oh, so you're in my same time zone. Welcome. We have Travis Baldry and Eric Schaefer of Double Damage Games. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you
very much.
Glad to be here.
Oh, we are very glad because I'm going to be honest. I've been a fan of your games for a very long time.
Oh, thanks.
A very long time.
Woohoo!
Fate. I'm going to be honest, Travis. Fate is a favorite of mine. I'm just going to be
wow.
I'm a little biased.
Made me blush a little bit.
Oh, wait a minute. You did Fade, huh? Oh.
Yeah.
That's mine.
Yeah.
All righty then.
And it's the pet thing. That's what I love about it.
Yeah.
I can have a little kitty with me or a doggy.
The funny thing is, I felt like I was stealing that when I did it. I was like, I was sure that it was in some other game. I was like, you know, I'm just taking this from some other game.
No, you weren't.
But I couldn't remember which game it was, and I guess I wasn't.
So were you guys
but at
the all...
time?
Were you guys at all involved in the Torchlight stuff? Because I know that was...
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
I was the president and ran it for 6 years, and Eric was the chief creative officer.
Oh, okay.
We were both co-founders, so...
And even before that, you guys worked on the Diablo games. Is that correct?
I never did.
Oh,
I never did.
Okay.
I just brush up against that fame. That's all Eric.
But that's the thing, though, right? So the guitar player in this game, is it the same guitar player from Diablo?
It is not.
Okay.
It is not. Matt's still with Runic, so he's still doing Runic music.
That's a good question. I want to get to music in a bit, but I want to ask, since you guys came from these amazing ARPGs, which are fantasy, why space? I mean, I'm not complaining. I'm insanely curious.
I mean, for me, honestly, there's no swords. Thank God. I've had enough swords to last me for a while. Because okay. we were figuring out how many years we've been doing this. Eric's been doing 20 years of action RPGs now? Is that right?
Yeah, 93 is when we started Blizzard North, or the company that became Blizzard North.
Oh,
so
my God.
21 years, I guess, of ARPGs.
And I've been making them for at least 10. So it's time to do anything else. And I've always loved space stuff. I'm pretty sure Eric always loved space stuff. So.
Yeah, in fact, I've taken a couple stabs at making space games before. They always get canceled about a year in. Even back at Blizzard, we had a space game. It was codenamed Starblow going.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, this was this never even got announced or anything. Blizzard cancels a lot of games, so it's not uncommon. But we were a year into making a game that was, you know, it was a space Diablo game. This is probably right after the Diablo 2 expansion stuff.
Oh my God!
and shortly, when we canceled that, I left the company within a couple of months of that. So that was going to be a space game, and then we made another stab at Runic, too, making a game similar to what we're looking at right now. But they just keep failing so far. I suspect this one's going to take, though.
Better. It better.
I'm
no
not
choice,
sure.
Man.
Killius in our chat asks if that's like space cocaine.
What's space cocaine?
Space blow. Star blow.
Space blow?
Whatever.
Star blow.
Probably. We ought to add that, actually, as a commodity.
Star blow. That would
Star
be...
cocaine, Star Blow. That'd be
well,
a nice
there are there are some illegal items that you can trade in here. I saw there.
Yes, there are contraband. They're not really acting as illegal yet, but they will be soon.
So are you guys going to play kind of midstream in this? Are you going to start from the beginning? Are you going
to? I'm pretty close to the beginning with it.
Float about.
Yeah. Cool. What I did, I started out just kind of discovering the game, and and you know, the controls and stuff. And I'll say that first off is that very intuitive on the controls and UI, right? So
you have no idea how much work has gone over to those in the last few weeks alone.
Oh, we can tell the usability is really fantastic.
That's so great to hear.
Yeah,
I'm a bit of a freak about that. So
yeah,
that's the thing that I look at is just like, can I figure out what's up? You know, so I discovered that there's two stations that are very close to where you start, and one of them has had like a mining thing going on, and the other one doesn't really have a whole lot that I could cargo back and forth. But at least you start, you know, with some cargo capacity in the ship that you've got. So I started flying ore back and forth to make a little bit of a profit until I got to the point where I could afford gold. And then I was like, oh yeah, I'm getting the gold, and you know, these guys are mining it, so I'm gonna just haul all this gold. I'm gonna get stinking rich and break the game and have the biggest ship in here in about 2 hours. So I bought like the giant jumbo cargo hold, and I go back over there, and oh, they're out of gold.
They sap out. Did they have a?
Yeah.
Well, it's because it does get consumed and it gets replenished over time. So
oh, okay. So if I wait,
you actually can knock the levels out, you know, and then the prices alter based on, you know, what they've got on hand and so on and so forth. The economy's not fully live yet. I mean, it's like in a static state so that it doesn't advance prices based on market conditions over time yet, because it's a heck of a lot easier to test if it's sitting still.
Yeah.
But you still have events and you still have resources that are consumed and replenished.
Oh, okay. So you're going to have a dynamic supply and demand economy going on here.
Yeah. And, you know, ideally you should be able to see what kind of merchants are going hither and yon. You can already watch events. I don't know if you've seen famines or gold or mining rushes and stuff.
Well, I saw the mining rush, and that's how I got rich.
The events will change the economic conditions and what's available. If you have a famine, you know, they're really going to want to buy food, and you can actually find, you'll see them actually on the big system map. You can see like little icons for the different kinds of ships. So you'll see a famine relief vessel go to a famine ravaged planet, and you can just go hijack it and steal all the food and then go sell it for a profit.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I would, did my ship get repaired? I had to repair it, but then I flew to the other station, and it doesn't say that I need to repair it anymore. But I was a little bit short of cash, and you know, because it was like $6,000 to repair, and then I noticed I got $12,000 here. So
it should be more like six if you've got, unless you've got expensive hull yet.
I bought a pretty expensive hull because that's when I got rich, but then the gold was gone, right? I decided I was going to go for survivability because I went out on a couple of those bounty things as a noob, and boy, that was a mistake.
Yeah, that might have been difficult.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what you did on the opening couple missions, the story missions. I'm curious because there's like, I think, five ways to do the first mission. I'm just curious which one
really?
You took.
Did you just
go straight and narrow?
Yeah, I just, you know, there's an
just
icon.
Paid him and went back?
There's an icon there and like, go kill that guy. So.
Well, before that, there's one where you go talk
where you meet people
and do like the exchange.
Yeah, it was just like fly there, go to the bar, talk to the guy.
You get the whiskey exchange? Did you do the whiskey exchange? You
must have. I went and talked to the guy. Yeah, and
yeah,
it's like
okay.
You know,
and you just paid him and left.
Right.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah,
I was just curious what you did.
Well, I guess you would have the option, right? You could murder the guy and take the whiskey. You know?
And also intimidate him to giving it to you for free.
Oh.
Interesting. You can never go see him at all, and you can just go buy some whiskey for cheaper and keep the cash.
Oh, neat. Yeah, I didn't realize that at all. It was just, you know, I took it literally, like, go here, do this. And you know, because it strikes me as, like, you know, you're in tutorial phase at the very beginning, so we're going to kind of teach you the game and lead you around by the nose and show you the things. But I have not encountered having that much freedom in the tutorial before, so.
Yeah, we wanted to just do it right away.
Yeah.
As soon as you get and talk to the other guy, the smuggler, you can also choose not to do that mission, and he'll give you an alternate that doesn't involve killing anybody.
Oh, neat.
Oh, nice.
You can also, when you go and kill that guy, he hails you when you fly up, and you can pay him off, and he'll just leave and pretend to die.
Wow.
Oh.
Very interesting.
Very nice. So yeah, I was noticing that the game does give you some fantastic choices. In terms of how you deal with missions, like it's not always just shoot. You have a little bit of variability, which is really nice. I gotta
say, most of the captains can be hailed. If they've got a little like wireless icon above their deal, you can hail most captains, and you can just well, you can tick them off, or you can try and ingratiate yourself to them. And I mean, it depends on your faction.
Mm-hmm. I'm just surprised that you would have that much branching weirdness right at the very beginning, because it's the level of effort that has to go into that before you even tell the player, hey, you can make choices in this stuff, you know, to actually let them discover it like that. Because I wonder how many people really even will think of it.
And they may not. My hope is that there'll be just that percentage that try the other dialogue options, the ones that are like not the obvious ones to take, just to try them out. And they'll be like, oh, wait, that actually did a thing. And I can live with that thing, and I can actually make these alternate responses, and they work. They're not a dead end.
Mm.
Partially, we're trying to just use these initial missions as getting the systems working too. This is all in development. There probably won't be the same missions in the long run. We're just trying to figure out how to get these branching and multi-path kind of missions working.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
And that's awesome. Now this early version that you wonderfully provided us. Thank you so much for that. It seems pretty early, because you said there's only the one star system and the economy doesn't work, blah, blah, blah. How far along is this? Like, how many months of work is this particular version?
I guess this is 7 months.
Wow.
So you guys have done this before, huh?
We've made some games before.
We're using the engine and the tools, it's a lot different game, but a lot of this is built on the Torchlight engine and tools, which we licensed back from Runic after we left there.
Oh,
so
wow.
We got a jump start with that kind of stuff, although, I mean, we had to redo a lot of it to make a space.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I rebuilt the art path for Runic right before I left, so it's not even Torchlight, honestly. It's a lot different than Torchlight at this point. It's a fully shader-based, and Torchlight, I'm not going to get into nerdy stuff. You don't care.
We care. No, we do care.
Torchlight has a really limited set of shaders. It was mostly a fixed-function game, you know, pretty retro in a lot of ways, and this is much fancier. Also, there's just fundamental changes, because this has to be a double-precision world, which is actually a huge pain in the butt, because to have really large spaces and have them be rendered when you've only got 32 bits of precision in the Z buffer is something that's specifically weird to do. You have to do all kinds of garbage to make these really distant objects function properly and sort properly. So a lot of the work went into that, and switching everything to being fully streaming so that you could just zip around and you could have 10, 20,000 ships out there flying around and have them nicely pop in and out and have it not be a load.
Yeah, because even this one solar system feels fairly fleshed out. I mean, I was passing merchants and military ships and came upon random groups of enemies that would usually kick my butt. So even this early version is really, I just got to say, it's really well done.
Yay!
everything feels really
randomized,
nice.
Actually. So you started out at specific stations, Jim, but the next time you play through, they'll be different. So all the layouts are always different on every new playthrough.
Oh, I love it.
So the solar systems are generated with accrete. I don't know if you're familiar with accrete, solar system generator that simulates dust accretion to figure out where planets should go and how many moons they should have, you know, based on a set of parameters. So it's kind of like a modified version, but it uses that to generate solar systems. Eventually, there'll be not actually that long from now, there'll be the ability to jump between systems, and each one will be pretty different. And
wow.
We'll, you know, partition all the factions between them and different sorts of anomalies and locations and what have you.
I think that's fantastic. It's really interesting, the combat style that you guys chose to go with here, with the whole broadside thing. I don't know if that was inspired, like, hey, we just want pirate feel.
A lot of it was, honestly, Black Flag. Did you play Assassin's Creed Black Flag at all?
No, sure didn't.
Did not.
I've seen some of the naval stuff, though, so
it's this very action-based naval combat, which feels really nice to do. And, you know, then the idea was, well, that would be way cooler in space with all the stuff you get in space. You know, if it's boats, all you've got is, you know, some cannons and very slightly different kinds of cannons. And here we get all this cool stuff that we can bring, you know, into play. Mm. Also, I think you get cooler looking space battles when you get to be a little back from the action and you have a lot more weaponry.
Oh, yeah.
Besides,
absolutely.
You got Star Citizen, you got Elite, you got enemy Starfighter. Plenty of people are making cockpit Space Sims right now.
That's right.
We're doing a different thing.
No, yeah. we need more capital ship games.
Oh, absolutely.
It's fabulous.
It's the whole broadside thing is just what's so interesting to me, because the way that these things always end up is that the ships end up circle strafing each other anyway.
Yes.
So you might as well put the guns on the side and do it that way, right? And it just feels really good. And what it reminds me of actually is Taldron's old game, the Starfleet Command thing, you know, where whenever we were looking at I'm terrible with game names. Brian, what's that one that just came out and we've been playing and I can't remember the name of it right now?
Starport Gemini 2?
Yeah, Gemini. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
So it kind of is like, this is what I wish that game was doing, kind of. So because I played that and I just kind of had this mental wish list. Like, I wish it was a little smoother about that. I wish it was a little more interesting about this. I wish the camera worked this way. And then I got a hold of this thing last night, and I was just like, "Oh yeah, all those things." So
this is how this should be.
Yeah,
it really just feels. Now, you guys said you worked pretty hard on the controls, and we could tell. Like, how much work goes? Like, did you do the testing yourself? Did you enlist other people to help you guys out? Like, because the controls feel really nice, and I gotta say, I love how you just have the persistent buttons on the screen just remind you always what everything does. But it's minimal. It's kind of minimal, so it doesn't get in the way.
I mean, it's been pretty much constant development since we started, you know, going through revisions more or less all the time. The last couple of weeks have been a lot about just user-facing stuff, like, can you tell when this prompt pops up? Is it clear what this is doing? Can you even navigate these menus? Literally 2 days ago, redid the way that the broadside indicator works to make it clearer and to make it possible to tell that it was reloading without looking down. So the little expandy bars that then contract and give you that information, like in the center of the screen, it didn't used to work like that. So all these sorts of little there's all kinds of weird stuff, like when you're attacking a ship on the screen right now, but it auto pitches down or up as they break off the bias. Mm. It's just because we found people would fiddle with the right stick on the camera and constantly be massaging it to try and get those things in view. Some of the last testers was my 9-year-old. I had my 9-year-old girl play through all the intro missions and watch what she did with the buttons. And anyway, it's just been a lot of those sorts of refinements, all those little mini tips that pop up in the corner that tell you stuff. Oh, you should scan now, or you can use your boosters because you've been hammering on the A button over and over and over again and not going any faster. And
I did love that. I was doing that earlier. I was like, I want to go to warp. Let me go to warp. Why won't you let me go to warp? And it's like, you know, you can boost, right? Oh yeah, I forgot about that. It
helps a little bit.
Thank you very much. Now, what does the tactical mode do? I noticed you can activate that with the Y button in the radial menu, but I'm not fully clear on what it does.
So there's a couple things it'll do. One, it'll actually show red indicators around the edge for targets that are broken down into fighters and capital ships that just point in the direction, so that if you can kind of see how many are off that way, even if you can't identify them on screen. When they get within a certain range, they get a little circle and a vertical line, sort of like what you would see in Homeworld to let you know how far something is off of the working plane.
Right.
So you can get an idea of how high or low a fighter is individually. And also, if you look to the side in tactical mode, there's a broadside indicator. It's like a gray pie slice. And if something is within broadside range, it'll flash red. So you can tell that something is within firing arc range.
Oh, that's what that does.
I never use it, but it's there.
Well, it's nice, because if it wasn't there, people would be like, boy, I wish this was here. So we've got the option, right? And it's anything that's good for situational awareness in anything that's doing 3D, right, is definitely great.
I see one on the screen right now, a little red arrow, and then it blinks to gray, I guess. It goes from nothing to solid gray if there's something in the zone.
Hmm. Yeah, just watching you play, it's cool to see that you are figuring out the broadside thing. That's something we worry about. Are players going to be able to figure that out on their own? My brother is not very good at figuring out the broadside play, so we keep making it easier and easier and trying to add more cues.
Yeah.
It looks like you've got the hang of it.
Yeah, I'm going to actually kill it for a second because that music, I got to turn it down because I don't want people to not be able to hear you. Okay. You can't hear it because it's on Twitch.
Oh, that's right.
It'll be on the stream. But it's in my ear pretty loud. Oh gosh, maybe I need to mute it. Because the slider all the way down is not muted. Anyways, so what was the pitch here? Like, how did you guys sit down and say, let's make this and make it do these things in this kind of universe?
Well, I think we were working on this very shortly at Runic when we were still making games there. The whole team was making a similar game. It's developed very far from what we were doing then. But we started on a game like this. It kind of petered out in development. And then when Travis and I decided to just go off on our own, both of us still liked that old idea and wanted to kind of get back into it and figure out if that was going to be doable. We totally simplified it. Back at Runic, we had 30 people working on the game, so it was kind of a bigger game with a bigger scope. But really, just cutting down the scope and making it doable by mostly just Travis, I think it made it a stronger game. It's just funner to play. It's funner to talk about. Both of us have wanted to do space games for some time. We even started to work on a similar game, but that just got us thinking about it in our heads ever since. So we're kind of ready to go when we split off.
Okay, so how did the universe come about, and what is going on in this universe? Like,
I mean, mostly I think what we end up doing is just stuff based on kind of a vibe that we want to hit. I mean, the root thing is you want kind of like the Han Solo simulator. You want to be an outlaw, and you want to be able to be kind of that mercenary outlaw guy, the Han Solo figure.
Oh, I love it.
And then it was like, well, what can we do to make that cool and fun, and just looking at games that we really liked. So there was a lot of things that I wanted to hit. I wanted to have character interactions like Star Control 2, where you had these kind of weird dudes that you could talk to and tick off, and they had specific personalities, and they looked like Jim Henson puppets, right? And I wanted, there's a really specific vibe to original Wing Commander Privateer, this sort of lonely frontier vibe where you go to the space station, there's like five freaking people there and a drunk guy in the corner, and it's sort of derelict, and it's everything kind of oily and gross. And I loved that. I always thought that was awesome, and I wanted to have that.
Joss Whedon would call that lived in.
Yeah. Lived in. That doesn't sound as good as gross, though.
Well,
gross
speaking
is
of
just a lot sexier.
Speaking of Whedon, right? So, because you got the kind of Western music going on here, and that, so little bit of a Firefly influence going
on. Yeah, it does. The weird thing is that's not how we came at it, but it just kind of arrived that way. So originally, we had kind of classic space epic music in there. We just licensed some cheapy stuff to have in, and it was really kind of cold and sterile, and just didn't dig it. One day I was working and I was listening to the Black Keys, and it was like one of their older albums that are a lot kind of smokier and bluesier. And I was like, yeah, this is what I want to be listening to while I'm flying around. So I just went to a music licensing site and grabbed a bunch of stuff. And my initial thought was like roadhouse music, that it would be kind of like this. What would it, if this was Bikers in Space, you know, what kind of music would they be playing when they went into the local, you know, dive bar that they were driving through? And this was the kind of stuff we ended up with. And then because the slide guitar slick kind of came in with that for the less tense sections, it ended up kind of arriving back at this Firefly vibe.
Yeah, it works really well. Now, we have a question from the chat room. With this being developed for the PS4 and the PC simultaneously, how well will mouse and keyboard work compared to a gamepad?
I don't see any reason why it won't work great. I mean, the control scheme's really not a difficult thing for mouse and keyboard, which is why I didn't do it first. Because it's on a plane, it's really not hard to turn laterally. You're going to use WSAD and the mouse to man your turret or your broadside camera, which is all pretty straightforward stuff.
Yeah.
Just the nature of the way it steers, it's not as hard as doing like an actual flight sim where you're doing like mouse reticle stuff to try and simulate a joystick on the screen.
Right.
This is a lot more straightforward to do. And when you are shooting and manning a turret, it's more like FPS controls where you just use your mouse as an FPS control. It should be really accurate and slick and easy to do. So I don't think you got anything to worry about there.
I'm a mouse keyboard guy from way back. It's got to work mouse keyboard for me. So right now I'm playing it with a controller, but at some point it's going to be, we're going to put the work in for mouse keyboard.
Yeah. Oh, good.
So one thing about the interface that it actually just dawned on me when I was fighting that guy, whenever you target somebody and then the reticle comes up, it's actually got the shield and armor display for the guy that you're fighting as far as the facings and that right in the targeting reticle, which I'd just been so busy shooting before that I didn't really realize that that symbology was functional.
Well,
so,
let me build on that. It kind of is the same thing as the radar because your radar is surrounded by your hull and your shield. I got to say, that's clever. Because it's just it combines all these different elements into just one element, and it just works.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of noise all over the screen either. So
there's been a lot of reduction. We've been sizing down elements and collapsing elements and removing stuff as much as possible. There's kind of a lot of vestiges of that, some of the ideas behind that Assassin's Creed had as far as the way that you manage like stations, although we have to do a lot weirder stuff with them.
I also got to say, looking at the combat here, I love the explosions.
Yeah.
They have a very like liquid feel to them.
Yeah,
like
it looks like propane water. In space.
Yeah, like ripply fiery fluid just blowing up from the center, and that just looks so. It's really satisfying because your weapons. I mean, especially when you're playing with a gamepad, you can feel them. You know,
yeah, the rumble is really nice
with the rumble, and so the weapons have weight, and then when something blows up, it's just like, yeah, this feels satisfying.
I think we're doing whatever we can to avoid just the void of space. You know, we don't buy into the realism stuff, obviously. We've got sounds going on and all kinds of stuff, but we just want it to feel meaty out there and physical. So I think you're picking up on what we're trying to go for.
Yeah. Now, one thing that we haven't really touched yet, but I think it's very important, and I think it's going to maybe initially freak people out, is that the whole game happens in a 2D space. There's a little bit above and below the plane, but you everything is on the plane of the galactic here, right?
Why would that freak people
because
out?
Because when people see a space game, they're like, my God, it's not, you know, because it's like Khan in Star Trek, right? It's like, I can't think in 2D.
But so many space games just deal with this 2D plane. I mean, Starfleet Command mostly had a 2D plane like this.
Right, and I don't have a problem with it. It's just that I think, you know, it's like we have to bring that up and then say, oh, and the game is much better for it. Because
it wouldn't work without it, honestly.
Yeah, and especially like the broadside stuff, right? Because then you'd have to pull in the ship and doing all the, and it just abstracts that away.
Ultimately, you're ending up flying Star Destroyers. I mean, can you imagine watching Star Wars and half of the Star Destroyers are pointing straight up and some of them are 45 degrees and they're just going all freaking different. It just doesn't make a very good space battle.
Oh, so how big do the ships get whenever?
Really, really big. This is the small, you're flying the smallest one that
you can
fly.
I saw two
really?
Other ones.
So they get, I wish I had a multiplier. I don't have a, this is like a little two-turret ship. And I want to say that the biggest ones that we've got right now should hopefully be about 16 to 18 turret ships with.
So if
God,
I
don't remember how many
broadsides
they
have.
If I type
in the like IDKFA or something, do I get like a giant ship? Can I cheat?
No, sadly, you can get you know the two bigger ones than this that are actually in this build, but you can't. There is a dreadnought out there. There's a few missions I think that use dreadnoughts, but even those aren't even fully outfitted. They've got like a minor set of turrets at this point. They're more just there to be there. There's a really small subset of the ships in the game that are in here. I've got a massive backlog of ship artwork that's got to go in and get set up. And you're mostly just looking at human ships. You've probably seen like one or two alien ships, maybe.
Yeah.
But there should be five races in the end, and everybody's got their own ships. And
how many ships will be available to fly?
We don't know the final number yet because we're not sure which ones will suck to fly. I mean, there's certain, you know, because some of them, I mean, there's real structural differences between the ships and where the hard points go makes a big difference. Like, can my turret actually point backwards on this ship? And you don't mind so much that if that's an alien ship, but if you're flying it, sometimes that sucks. So there should be hopefully a substantial number. I mean, there's lots of ships.
So
we're never going to let you fly them.
Three or four dozen, maybe somewhere in that area.
So is this single player only, or is there going to be okay? Which I'm kind of comforted
Thank
by.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much for that.
I'm thanking me every day too. I, after spending years and years on Torchlight 2 multiplayer, I'm good for multiplayer for a while.
Yeah, I do think though, like a DLC down the road or something. Like if you know what would actually work super great for this is not oppositional multiplayer. You know, but you know, not a, like an arena style thing or whatever, but just like co-op, just you and a buddy That's all you need. Yeah. You know, just like play through the campaign with a friend. You know, one guy's the primary player and has to actually take the missions or something. But yeah, it's I think that's as far as I want to crush dreams,
but it's the technical challenges to doing that are just enormous, mostly just due to the sheer quantity of objects, because keeping the universe synchronized, because like literally out there floating around in like a collapsed form are probably 20,000 to 50,000 ships just this system alone. They're off floating around and doing stuff, and
I'm surprised
trying to coordinate
that,
that really puts you in MMO territory.
Yeah, I'm surprised though that that you actually track all that stuff rather than
you want stuff to be there when you go back. I mean, part of it is like you want to be able to learn the system. You're like, oh, I know where that nebula is, and I left some loot there, and there was this asshole pirate who was taunting me, and I want to be able to go back now that I've got stuff and kick his butt. Or I just want to remember where the station was, and there was a battle going on there. And even if I, you know, warp out for a little bit, when I come back, it's nice if it's still there.
So does the universe do things when you're not even there? Like it, you know,
when it's closed, but when you're not nearby, yes. So that's why you'll see traders going around. So traders will just zip in and out, and eventually the military will start doing patrols, and bounty hunters will get sent after you. Uh-huh. And so if you go to 30 seconds from now, if you went to the system map, you'd see like the events going on the different stations, and you'd see little chevrons for different ships responding to different events. And if you go back to the map from time to time, you'll see that they've moved, and you can actually zoom all the way into them and see them.
Oh, okay.
All the ships are out there. So if you go to the map and you literally pan around the map, you can see everything. It's all there.
Neat. So like if, let's say I come in here and I start destroying all the police, right? Does that mean that the pirate presence is going to pick up in the system? Or if I start murdering the merchants, does the price of goods go up? Because
the price of goods won't change yet, but the merchants will all hate you. Eventually, there will be the aim is to have them be as tightly systemically bound as possible. So whatever lever you push, there's some kind of response so you can mess with stuff. So that's the end goal. And there's a lot of the underpinnings of that there now, and it's just pushing it as far as we can push it.
Okay. Is there a plan? Because this map is pretty large, right? So, and you were talking about like if you find something and you want to go back there, is there a way to bookmark waypoints, or is that
not yet? Okay. But there needs to be. The other thing that's planned is basically just discovery waypoints. When you come across a nebula, it'll have like a name, and then it pops it on your map so that you can see places that you have been that get kind of, you know, it's your kind of your fog of war, right? You're unraveling the map and figuring out what these locations are called. Just kind of randomly assigning that. I don't see any system events going on for you right now. You'd notice a yellow gear around any station that had a system event.
Okay, there actually is one. I'm going to be a while getting there.
I think I see one near the sun, you know, one of the inner planets there, yeah.
And then you can see them in the news in the bar. You'll see what events happened and how they resolved, you know, just kind of in a short history.
That's amazing that you have all these things going on, like in the background, even though you can't see them, the game still runs.
A lot of that kind of kicks back to pirates, honestly. It's like Sid Meier's Pirates. You had the little clockwork world, and you're watching here goes the little treaty vessel. Oh, and now the war's over. Here goes the food vessel, and now the famine's over. And there's all those little world that you could just like inject yourself into and kind of make your own story by taking advantage of the events that were happening. And we want to have that.
And there is a main story arc to this game. It starts with finding your aunt, I believe.
So far, I guess it's quite possible we'll just change all of this because
It was funny. I was listening to the beginning part, right, where you know you go and you talk to the guys and stuff, and they're like, "Yeah, so you know your aunt who used to be a pirate, and then she left you this ship, and then she wants you to go find these people and whatever." And I'm like, "Oh my god, it's I War 2." And
oh god, yeah, because your grandmother was in.
Yeah, exactly.
A little tiny bit. That's not
a little flashback, but it was almost like an homage, right? Like,
I guess it is now.
Well, there's stuff, you know. Like, I'm looking at the map and I see that, like, the name of a planet, you know, like Briareos, and I'm like, I see what you did there. So, you know, it's somebody's a Appleseed fan. That's all I'm saying.
It's our opportunity to grab all the great space stuff we've liked from games and movies and books and just throw them into this new game we're making. So, yeah, lots of references.
Oh, yeah, and I love that stuff. So, you know, I died. That was
30 seconds from now, you will die.
That was brief.
I don't. But apparently, it's only threat level orange.
Oh man, you should have pulled them back to where the military. That would have been cool.
Oh damn, Jim, you are getting hammered.
Yeah,
I see.
It was a thing. So, let's talk about death.
You gotta get a flak cannon, man. You gotta get a flak cannon.
Missiles. I've been relying on using the deflector, right? So that's one mechanic that we should mention is you have on the right bumper on the Xbox controller, you have basically a momentary shield that pops on, and it can only absorb so much damage, and it kind of loses, its meter drains out. You can't just hold it forever. But the enemy has that too. So yep. If you knock their shields down, they can actually pop their emergency deflector up and absorb enough hits. And I've noticed the enemy AI is smart enough to favor a side that I've beaten up, and it'll try and protect them. Yeah. So and I like that because it made it quite a challenge. I spent like a half hour trying to kill this one AI because my guns weren't strong enough to really do it. And I couldn't get his shields down. So what I ended up doing is I finally rammed him and just kind of plowed in at an angle, and we got entangled enough that I could just spam the broadside button and just blow the side off of him. But it took me like a half hour to maneuver him into a spot where I could get him wedged up like that.
Yeah, I like to get in close and then just be able to hammer them so that you don't have to bother to charge, because you can just wail on their hull so close and then they can't get peeled off.
We've even talked about having ramming upgrades, so you get some front quarter ram system that actually does extra damage against people when you do it.
Yeah, and I will say the ram animation is really pretty. I've never seen that before in a game where, it was like one of these gun turret things, right? And there is just like pieces peeling off. The collision actually looked to have some physical impact. It wasn't like, oh, we just bounced off each other. And
We want to get like the big buckling sounds and stuff if we can get them in there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Make it feel really
here. I'm gonna
chunky.
I'm gonna ram this guy here so he gets to see exactly what I'm talking about, because it's really cool. Let me
space
slow down.
Space garbage.
Whenever I try to ram something, I miss right past it. But whenever I'm not trying, I'm hitting all kinds of things. So good luck on the.
He's just gonna go bash into a stationary object.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome though. I mean, look at all that trash. Yeah. That's great.
We'll be able to see it in about 15 seconds.
So, and that's speaking of trash, right? Oh, let me shoot this guy. I assume that I can just like randomly start blasting traders and stuff, right?
You can call him too. You can hail him.
Oh, how do you hail in here?
So if you look at him, you'll see your thing up on your Y. See how it just popped a hail? You can also go to the scan, right?
Okay. See, I didn't have a hail option on some of the pirates, I guess, because they're just hostile.
Some of them don't. They just don't have a captain. So not all of them are actually set up to have them. You can also, if you go to the scan menu, you can take your time, look at everybody, and hail only people who you want to hail. So you can just make him immediately aggressive by telling him to piss off.
Oh, neat. So what does this pulse thing do?
Go ahead and do one. It works kind of like a radar ping on a sub. So you'll see ghost images of different classifications of objects at distance.
Makes it
you see the little diamonds
out.
That popped up, but it'll also let you ping things that are much further than your visible distance. You can also use it in asteroid fields, and it will ping asteroids that have minerals in them.
Oh, very nice.
So if you get a mining laser, same thing in like ice fields. If they've got, mineable water or minerals, you can find out. It's also, at least not in your build, but in my build, you can also use it to ping secrets like cargo containers and ejected cargo, and it'll find them also at a distance. The aim is to have upgradable scanners that have different capabilities for finding different things. So you could get like theoretically trading oriented scanners that will give you an idea of how wealthy a given ship is, or piracy oriented scanners, I guess is a better way of saying it. And then combat oriented ones that'll give you like relative, strength, at a glance and a distance. So if without having to fly up to them, you can do a pulse and say, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. Or, yeah, those guys are a bunch of pussies.
Oh, neat. Yeah, because by the time you get in visual range, it's too late.
Sometimes it's hard to get away, so.
Yeah, that was a thing that I was kind of appreciative of, actually, was it is difficult to get away from them, and it's difficult for them to get away from you if you're persistent about boosting and chasing after them and that. At least in the beginning ship, right? I'm sure, yeah. Like, I could have threw money into
not so bad.
Again?
Yeah, once you throw money into boosters, it's not so bad.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I'd basically, like, boost and then... because I could lose the capital ship, but the fighters would stick to me. And then I'd end up jumping in the turret, spinning it around backwards, hit the brakes, you know, let the fighter, like, fly into all the flak I was throwing, and then take off again.
The EMPs will come in. We're about to add the EMP weapons that you'll be able to use to temporarily disable fighters, so you could, like, drop an EMP bomb and
send
nice.
It to take off.
Yeah, what about mines in general? Is that going to be a thing?
There are mines. Actually, if you're unlucky, you'll run into a minefield. They exist.
But there'll be mines
that you can eject.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there'll be mine weapons, probably explosive ones as well as EMP ones. We're just going to play with all the weapon types we can get in here, frankly.
I love it.
The more you can have, the better. You know, and the more interesting things they do, the better. There's also secondary things like you'll be able to get warp inhibitors, and so will other ships, so that it increases the distance you have to get before you can warp, or they can, if you're trying to be a pirate.
Oh, very cool.
Will you be able to get a ship large enough to launch fighters? Or that's something...
I don't think we're ever going to let you launch fighters, but we might let you launch, like, drones.
Okay.
But we don't know yet. Initially, we've been leaning more toward the mercenary thing, where you can hire different ships that you can bring along with you, especially if you don't want to fight. If you just want to, like, sit... So did you figure out the turret AI yet? I don't know if you've looked at that yet.
I did see a thing... let me go out here.
I did play with that earlier, where you could, like, I had two turrets on my ship, and I sent one to only target fighters.
Yeah,
for example, that's kind of nice because it's kind of a weaker turret, so I wanted the other turret to just target just about anything, and the weaker turret to go for. Ooh, that was a beautiful explosion.
Yeah, where do I change that at? So it's the start button and then tactical.
You go over to tactical and then with the bumper.
Right, so I can tell it. Only the lock target, only fighters, whatever. So, but
right,
the turrets have like a lower fire rate when you're not in them, right?
Correct.
Okay.
They do. But on the bigger ships, I mean, when you get into the larger ships. So one of the things we also have talked about, there's a whole other block of upgrades that's not in here right now, which is software upgrades. And that's kind of like passive upgrades, like how, you know, some sort of augmentation that lets heat be managed more effectively or refire gets increased or whatever. So the aim is for you to be able to slot in these little passive upgrades that give you one bonus or another.
Now, like I noticed on this one ship, if you have both turrets on there, you can control them individually. Will you be able to like slave them at some point, like maybe with a software upgrade, so you can point all of them at once at the same target, for example?
On bigger ships, they're pre-slaved. They actually go into stations. So
okay.
The next step up, there's two in the front that are slaved together, and they'll both follow the reticles.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
And that can get complicated because you're like, I've got a missile on this one, and I've got a laser beam on this one. And so they aren't necessarily, you know, a great pairing.
So
right now we just let you do that. I don't know if we'll put restrictions so that categories of weapons have to occupy pairs. We've still got to sort of figure out what works best.
So is it a thing where you move the reticle around and then whichever turrets could potentially shoot at that are going to be the ones that respond?
Okay. That's basically how it works. But it's still, you know, the real hindrance is that if you've got something that consumes ordnance like a rocket turret, and you're just trying to shoot something with a laser beam, it's annoying if it's expending rockets when you don't want it to.
Yeah, so, it's almost like you need a modifier button that hold this and hit fire, and then you'll shoot ordnance too.
Yeah, and or we'll add a way to break out the stations into, you have some sort of override where you can just choose to control both stations at once or switch. Not as like a temporary modifier, but just like as a way to cycle through. Like it goes up and down on the D-pad to go through the stations and then left and right to choose the configuration of the stations or something. It's probably too fiddly, but it's one of those things that we're kind of trying to decide what to do with.
Yeah, I trust that you'll get there. It'll be the right thing. Because looking at the way that everything else has been done here, I really don't have any UI complaints other than like the waypoint stuff and that. But I mean, God, you said you've been working on this how long? Like a week?
7 months.
7 months.
Yeah. An incredibly short amount of time, right? So, because how many people are on the team? It's you two guys?
Us two. This is it. You're talking to it.
Wow.
What?
So art and everything, huh?
We outsource chunks of art and license music and anything else that we can license. So there's one guy we outsource the ships from, and then there's a couple different people we outsource the character models from. And right now for the animations, I just use a Kinect, and you can do really, really cheapy video capture with that.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
So well, I'm glad somebody found a use for that thing.
Yeah, my wife is all the computer voices, and I'm all the dude voices.
Even the voices that sound like, you know, I tap, bat, tap, chula.
Yeah, yeah. Solo. Yep. Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, those are great, by the way. I love how the like it's Star Wars in that like not everyone speaks English. You know, even with a universal translator, you still got it's aliens.
Honestly, that's like a defense mechanism. It's like, okay, how are we gonna write a story where we actually record all the dialogue? We won't. We'll just make up some gibberish and then we can use it however we want.
I love that though. That's beautiful. Then we have a couple of questions from the chat room. First, are you planning on allowing modding for this at all?
So we're not planning to prevent it, but there's really not any effort going into like putting together modding tools for this because, quite frankly, we just don't have the time. Oh, I mean, every last second we've got is going in and getting this game done.
Right.
But if somebody, you know what's going to happen, right? I'm going to tell you what's going to happen is about a month after you release this thing, then you're going to have the Normandy in here from Mass Effect.
And then
you'll have Star Trek ships, and it will happen, and you will have the Star Destroyers. So that would be pretty great. We could have like Babylon 5 versus Star Trek. So
the nice thing about games is they're usually not that hard to mod anyway, because ships are they're kind of solid state, right? It's an object. It's not like a character needs to be skinned, and it needs to wear the armor, and it has to support this other face, and. Yeah, modding is usually pretty hard these days, but spaceships are kind of easy.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not going to do anything to prevent it. We don't have deliberately obfuscated file formats. You know, it's really pretty straightforward. So if somebody wants to mod this, it probably won't be that hard. And because it's randomly generated, it's all about having big buckets of data.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of apportions them. So right. Adding new stuff sort of adds it to the game.
Wow. I'm shocked. Actually, that you guys have all this procedurally generated, though, or will in the later build.
I mean, it's kind of a mix, right? So some of it we lay out, but then it's procedural where it's placed, uh-huh. Right? So it's like I will make this layout for this asteroid belt, and then it can appear anywhere, but it could also turn out to be an asteroid belt with mines, or these ships could spawn inside of it. And then there's big buckets of, like, flight groups and ship layouts and like event layouts that also just kind of go into the hopper, and each one has a weight for how likely it is to show up. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's other like gating factors, like this one can only show up within these sort of regions of difficulty or these temperatures or whatever.
Mm. It helps that we've been making procedurally generated games for our whole careers, pretty much. Well, the Diablos, the Torchlights. So that's the way we think about them anyway when we're laying out the data structures. That's where we start with these kind of games. It almost makes it easier for us to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's
do what you know.
Yeah.
Yep. Also from the chat room, when we were talking about weapons, Neural Splice?
Oh, hey, that's actually my buddy Mike. We went to high school together.
Neural Splice, they recommended like Mech Warrior style weapon groups.
I'll have to go back and look at MechWarrior style weapon groups. Yeah. Are these just kind of like macroed settings where it's like
I believe so. You can set like lasers and then cannons and then missiles. You can have like a long range group and a short range group.
Assigning those to groups is not a bad idea at all. Something we could maybe add to the tactical menu where you have like a station override where you can just, you know, check mark the turrets that you want as part of a station. And it kind of defaults to just the ones in the station groups, but you can set it up however the heck you want. That's not a bad idea at all.
Especially as we get into more and more turrets on these bigger and bigger ships. That's probably a good solution.
And especially given that where they're located on the ship actually matters. You know, if it's on the bottom, it's a lot different than it's on the top, you know, as far as what things it can reach. And that's not a bad idea at all. Thanks for the suggestion. I'm definitely going to be mulling over that.
Oh, cool. So I'm noticing on the news board here, right, where it says war struck Zeus 5, a treaty delegation set off from Briareos to broker peace. So I assume if I take off, I can go find those guys and kill them, right?
You can find those guys right now. So if you exit and go to the system map, you'll see a diamond that has like a little fleur-de-lis kind of symbol in it. That's the And that's the treaty ship. So when you pop out, go give it a whirl.
I see it.
You see it? And you can zoom all the way in and see the delegation if you zip down in there.
They're on a diplomatic mission.
So you'll see there'll probably be a treaty vessel and there'll be probably a couple of military vessels with them, maybe a mercenary or two as protection.
Yeah. So if I put the nav point on the ship, it's in space
it won't follow it. So there's no way to attach a nav point to an object at this point. But if you know where they're going, you can put one in advance and it's pretty easy to run into them. Mm. So when you warp up next to them, you both slipstream warp so that you start to match warp speed. So you can drift in next to them. And if you get within like 1.5 and you drop out of warp, you'll pull them with you. So you can yank people out of warp.
Oh, that's amazing.
They'll probably annihilate you. But if you were to kill them, the war would go on longer because once they get there, the war will end.
Oh, cool. So this time around, I have a mercenary because you can hire a mercenary for $1,000. Yeah,
you mentioned mercenaries earlier, but I wanted to ask, what does that do? Like, do you not have to shoot now because you have a mercenary? They can do all the shooting.
No, remember?
No, they're not going to take them all out. These are just little gunships, so they have like one little turret on the bottom, and they'll get blown to pieces if you take them into something too hot.
Yeah, remember in Diablo when you could go in the town and hire like an archer to follow you around? Yeah, it's that.
So the aim is that there'll be several different kinds of these, and when you meet them in the bar, instead of just doing a button that says I pay you this money and I get a mercenary, you'll actually have to talk to them, and then you'll bargain with them for how much to hire them for, and you'll find out something about them. So it could be the crazy robot mercenary who never runs away, or it could be the freaky dope fiendy pirate guy who's really kind of scared but really cheap. And so ideally there'll be these sort of characters that you get that have a different purpose and they fly different ships. So you'll talk to them and find out what kind of ship they fly and then decide if you want to use them. Ideally, it'll get a lot more developed than it is right now, which is just we support the fact that you can have a mercenary. Your mercenary is probably going to be a little bit doofy right now because I just discovered today that he doesn't have a sublight drive installed. So when you go to sublight, he will drift behind you and then warp to catch up and then drift behind you and then warp to catch up. Rest assured, he now has a sublight drive.
So what is the difference between the normal drive and the sublight drive and the warp drive? Because I know it's like sublight would kick in before you could warp.
So it's all just based on proximity of objects. If you're really, really close to stuff, in order to keep you from banging into it, you drop to kind of like this just sort of impulse drive.
Right.
Where you're maneuverable. That's basically combat maneuvering speed. Once you get out of a certain range, you get to sublight, which is still, you don't want to go too fast, certainly not warp speed because you'll just bang into stuff. But especially if nobody's around, you can still kind of book along and get where you want to go. And then when you're at a sufficient speed where you're not going to immediately pile into a planet, we let you go to warp.
Yeah. So, now, Brian,
the warp speed ramps up and down based on that proximity, too. So you'll notice that your warp speed kind of goes faster and then slower as you get nearer to objects, or especially to other warping objects.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So the deal is you've been playing a lot of Elite Dangerous. So it works like that.
It reminded me of that.
The closer you get to something with mass, the slower you go, the bigger the mass is.
Yeah.
So
And it's just a very practical, I don't want to run into everything sort of picture.
I don't want to crash into that planet.
It also just has the effect of looking neat because things come at you really fast and then they do that kind of slow down and stop, which is kind of cool just looking.
It sounds cool too. The sound effects are really nice. For that, I like the kind of shimmery, watery effect that you get when you're in warp.
Oh yeah, with like the distortion.
Yeah, exactly. How are the missions generated on the mission board? Is that choose from a pool? Or are they also randomly generated?
They're all different like template missions that we just kind of keep adding. So you've got a pretty small subset here. Usually they're tied to factions in some way. They'll have like a faction penalty or gain based on doing them.
Right.
They will get more stratified between the different stations as the stations start becoming owned by different factions. So if you go to pirate stations, you're going to have different kinds of stuff to do than if you go to a military station. So basically the pile will just grow and they'll become more divided between the different locations and economies.
Okay. So let's talk about the factional system because we've breezed upon it a bit, but it seems pretty integrated into everything. Like I noticed that, like you can easily see no matter where you are in space, the factional values of like your immediate area, which is pretty awesome.
I mean, part of this is like the factions are supposed to be kind of like an expression of the kind of character you're playing to a certain extent, right? What kind of person am I being right now? And so we want you to have a good handle on how that's going, and we want you to be able to influence it in multiple different ways, which is why we have like being able to talk to somebody. You know, ideally, I should be able to hail a trader and ask them what they've got to sell and, you know, make a trade with them, and just interacting with traders that way should, you know, endear me to the trading community. And the more I do that, if I go to a station where, you know, the Merchants Guild is the primary faction, then I should get some sort of benefit from that, like in prices or, you know, services for getting bounties or just the kind of missions that I can take on. And then the same thing's true for pirates or the military or whatever. If I do a lot of missions for the military and I really get in good with the military, then maybe they won't scan me for contraband at all. So I can kind of exploit it. But also I should be able to call up a military flight group that I pass on the way to go do some mission and say, hey, would you guys give me a hand? And they'll say, okay, and follow me and give me a help.
Mm. We also hope that we'll be able to unlock certain ship upgrades, like certain weapon types or engine types. They're only available if you become friends with the pirates or the Corian aliens. They'll have a special kind of laser that you have to build faction with those guys to be able to buy.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Hey, so I have this mission that I'm kind of stuck here, right? So there's a mission to come to this station, and I come here, but I go to the bar, I go to the commodity market, I go to the mission board, and I don't see anywhere to actually turn this mission in.
Is it a delivery mission?
Yeah.
They're not fully fleshed out right now. They're just kind of blocked in there for us to get a handle on. So they're not super smooth right now.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to pick up some cargo at a different station and then bring it to that state.
It's like a sourcing mission.
Oh, okay. I thought I got the cargo at the time I took it.
Yeah, these are actually sourcing missions. They just have a terrible name. So you have to find – you find the cargo for as cheap as you can get it, and you get a nice markup when you bring it to them.
Oh, okay. That makes sense then. Yeah, because I just thought it was a FedEx thing. So
there will be some FedEx ones that are like explicitly delivery missions that either take cargo space or no cargo space, where you're just like taking a message or whatever. But this is a sourcing mission. Just I had source as the title, but it didn't seem really clear either. So.
Oh, I love it. I always do missions in games like this. Now, speaking of that kind of thing you were talking about, you know, traders and stuff, will you be able to join, like, guilds? Like, can you join the pirates? Can you join the traders guild? Blah, blah, blah. Is it just you're this independent guy who has these factional reputations?
I think it would be nice to join the guilds. I would like to do that. I don't know if that's actually what will happen, just based on time and whatever, or right. It will make sense in the end. But I would like to be able to, you know, buy a guild membership and get specific things as a result.
Yeah, like, because that was in Privateer, I believe, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you could be the Merchants Guild, the Pirates Guild, and the Mercenaries Guild.
Exactly. Right? You could do missions for any of them, but mm-hmm.
They each had their own mission sets.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was awesome.
I liked that a lot.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I would love to see that.
How does the game scale as far as difficulty goes? Is it going to be... like, I go to more distant systems and it gets wickeder? Or and also, these games tend to get to a point, right? Like, you know, this is kind of like Skyrim in space, right? And in a game like that, like, once I've got the biggest ship, I've got the biggest guns and the biggest shields on it and stuff, then mm-hmm. I can just roam around in the sandbox forever and just murder everything, right? So there's no end game to that other than you know, I've killed everything or I'm you know, I kind of grow weary of being a superpower.
Yeah. I don't know yet. So one of the things we often did in like the ARPGs is that it would actually ramp up like programmatically beyond what you could actually attain.
Mm-hmm.
So it would just kind of like faux level things continually up.
Right. But then you end up...
And so there, it was just like, how far can I get before everything kills me, as opposed to how do I get to a point where I'm God?
Right.
But there's also I don't know which way we'll go yet.
there's also a problem in there, like what they did in Oblivion, right? Is in Oblivion, whenever you would go level up and then you'd go back to a starter area, then you had like those level one rogues and they're wearing like dragon scale armor and, you know, have like super magic swords and stuff. And it's like, wow, why are you guys robbing people?
Why are you guys
in
here? And I don't think we'll be doing that at all. Usually when we did the, you know, I mean, really they were located in another zone. Uh-huh. So like in in Torchlight, it was either endgame maps, which were specifically kind of separated off from the game and provided that means of making an insurmountable challenge at some point. In Torchlight 1, it was like a dungeon, like an endless dungeon you could go into that just kept ramping up until you just could not progress any further. Mm-hmm. And for this, I don't know if we just do like a pocket warp to some weird system that's just crazy and leave everything else alone. I mean, we just haven't gotten to that point yet, so yeah. I don't know what we'll actually do.
It could be like wormhole space or something.
Yeah, it's just like weird, freaky space where everything is screwed up. But things don't auto-level anywhere else. It's all pre-distributed around the system. So the systems will ramp up as you go through them. It may not be a linear ramp because ideally the systems aren't linear. You know, it would be, you know, ideal if it's a web where you're able to jump through various locations at once, but you dip your toe and you're like, oh my God, no, I have to leave.
Well, we have a couple more questions from the chat again. First, let's talk about death because someone's curious about death and do you need insurance, for example, kind of like Star Citizen, for example. Like, how is death handled in the game?
So at present, the game can save anywhere. So if you leave in the middle of space, it'll just save right where you're at. Just because I like that.
Yeah, because nothing's more infuriating than quitting out and being like, oh God, I didn't save and I lost like 4 hours. Yeah.
So because of that, currently dying just rolls you back to your last save. So that may change. But I don't know what will change to yet.
You could do it in griefy Diablo style, where just like you're a loot pinata and all your stuff just barfs out into space, and then you have to go tractor beam it back in. Don't do that.
No, that's
too mean. Please.
I don't really want to do ship corpse runs.
What were you going to say, Eric? Were you going
to
say something?
Yeah, we'll have a mild penalty to prevent you from dying, but that's not really what the game's all about. We want you to just jump back in and start playing again.
Honestly, I'm so lazy these days. Just dying at all and having to get back to do what I was doing before is like enough of a penalty for me. I'm just such a lazy bastard.
and someone else asked if there will be like a new game plus mode. Like, if you finish the game, will there be, like, a new game mode with higher difficulty?
And that's kind of what we're getting into with the kind of the end game Uber scaling. That's theoretically what that would be. We just don't know what form it'll take yet. Because it's randomly generated, it's pretty easy for us to just dump you into a new system. But whether that'll be enjoyable or not, I don't know.
I'm sorry. Someone asked if there'll be fishing.
I don't know. Oh, I don't know. God. We have the crab pots. Yeah. So we have a secondary mechanic that we've been trying to figure out exactly how we want to do, which is you can leave what we call the crab pot somewhere to gather resources over time. And then it'll like beep you later and say, oh, I've got some cool stuff now. And then you go back and you get it. Those could also be attacked by people while you're away. Oh, no, somebody's attacking your crab pot, which we wouldn't call a crab pot. But. You know,
you're gas crabs.
We could have space crabs. Eric is desperate for space jellyfish. He really wants space jellyfish.
Oh, God, that would creep
well,
me
here,
out.
Well, see, here's the thing, right? So your fishing mechanic would actually be like you deploy some kind of a scoop, and then you fly through nebulas or something, right? And then you catch
picking up fish at this point.
Yeah, you catch space fish and then you feed them space to your tackle. Space amoeba, and then it turns into a dragon or something. And yeah, because you know,
my daughter had something she specifically wanted me to add, which was that you had to be able to get alien artifacts that actually hatched little aliens, and you had to be able to raise them and keep them as pets. My daughter was just.
Oh, dear God.
You have to put this in. This has got to be in.
Please, no. Please. That's too much. That's way too much.
I was like, honey, I don't think I'm going to have time for that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting you bring up the pod thing because I don't know if you guys ever played a game called Nomad back in 1993, but it had like little robots you can dump on planets that would mine, and then they would tell you when it was done, you'd go pick them up.
Cool.
Yeah.
Which was awesome.
I'm happy to steal that.
That's the thing that I was thinking about. Because when I was playing this before, one of the first thoughts that I had, and I mentioned the Normandy getting modded in here, right, is in Mass Effect, had you been able to fly the Normandy around like this between planets, that would have perfected the game for me, right? because all that space stuff was just abstracted away, and it was a walking simulator. But you know, I mean, I loved it, but this was the missing thing. But one of the mechanics that was in there that was really cool was like in Starflight, you know, you fly up to a planet and you scan it, and then you fire some probes into it and, you know, harvest stuff. So how about that? Like,
that's kind of what we were trying to get at, is that, and like in Star Control 2, where you send the little probe down and you drive around scooping up all the minerals and avoiding the lightning. Is that just sort of secondary, not necessarily combat, but still it's an activity deal? We originally talked about doing it with planets. It was more just do we really want to limit it only to planets, since a lot of the time you're flying around in space and we probably have other cool objects to do stuff at. So what we last talked about was that you would use the pulse, and that it would give you a resource rating. So you would kind of hunt around pulsing and trying to find the best resource rating. And there'd be obvious things that you could look at. Oh, if I'm in the middle of a nebula, I get a pretty good resource rating because this gas is harvestable. And then you would set up your little harvester there. So you're trying to like zone in on just the right spot that'll give you the best return. Or finding someone else's and then taking it over.
Oh, I love it.
We'll definitely add some mini systems like that. We're big fans of that kind of stuff.
So it sounds like you guys are, it's not just like a space game, but it's a space adventure platform.
Yeah. I mean, that's the idea. You know, you get because you got the character interaction and you have the combat, and then you have like your classic space tradinginess, and then any other stuff that we can cram in. I mean, you want to do I think we said this before, it's more of a role-playing game than any of the other role-playing games that we ever made, because you actually can make decisions about what kind of character you play, and it makes a difference. You don't, I mean...
Affect the world. Affect the galaxy.
Which is nice. Now, I think someone asked earlier, would there be, like, any kind of big conflict you can get drawn into? Like your Han Solo, can you get drawn into the rebellion? You know, that sort of thing.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. Well, you know, you were talking about like the war, right, and the diplomats going and stuff like that. I guess you could kind of influence politics and figure out like who's going to win what by who you kill and
the aim is to have those things all chain into other events. So you know, if this war takes place, the other kinds of events happen as a result. You know, like. Oh, now whatever planet lost is now totally impoverished, and the other planet now has this massive military buildup. And so these things happen that result in kind of little systemic events. Well, now there's military everywhere, but I don't get along with the military. I'm a pirate, so this is terrible.
Well, also if you wanted to play as a smuggler, right? You could just be an arms dealer and start shipping weapons over to one side.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessary that you have to actually be a combatant in order to change.
They're actually in there now. There's one that's called Border War. One of the missions is Border War, which is a big battle between a bunch of military cruisers and giant pirate vessels. And you can go lend a hand, and it's a big furball with, you know, 30 fighters flying around and a bunch of cruisers and lighting up over the place.
I want to do that
If you see the Border War mission, you'll see one. It's just got a bunch of junk. It's relatively rare and only certain stations carry it. And I'm sure it'll be red.
Yeah, I want to just get close enough to see it, not necessarily to participate.
You need to. It's gated by the difficulty level of your ship, kind of a hidden factor. So the mission won't even be available until your ship is a certain amount upgraded, probably the second ship.
Okay.
Yeah, you might not be able to get it at all for now anyway.
Okay, so speaking of difficulty levels and that, whenever a player starts the game, are you going to let them right from the get-go say, I want to be, you know, easy, medium, hard, or is it just you get what you get and it's how you play it?
We haven't really talked about it. I kind of feel like we should just do get what you get, but... Because it's open, you can make it hard if you want to make it hard. Really easy.
I think we can self-pace it as is. You can just keep doing blue missions from the mission board, which are the easiest ones. Or if you're feeling like, I'm really good at this game, tackle some oranges and reds. So it's already self-paced. So I don't know if we'll need a specific difficulty level.
I don't think you do. I mean, it's just another level of player choice.
Right. If it was really linear, I think we needed to, but because it isn't, I'm just not sure that we'll need to do that.
So one request that I do have is if you have like a wormhole somewhere that maybe you have to do something to, you know, hidden to unlock this wormhole, where you go in and then you're attacked by like cows with the space bubbles, you know, like the bubble helmets on cows with lasers. That totally.
He knows why. He knows why. Somebody played a lot of Diablo and Diablo 2.
I'm never going to live down the cow level.
That was the most memorable thing about Diablo 2 to me was the secret cow level and Wurt's leg in the cube.
Which was funny. It was like 2 days worth of work when we were all just killed at the end of the game, and then it became the most important thing about the game.
That's the way amazing. Those things go.
That's amazing.
It was completely excellent.
Well, what you need to do is add like a religious cult in there, and then have them give you missions where you could be like, the Inquisition. What a show!
Well, you know,
we call him the Space Pope right now. He needs some rigging.
Space Pope. No, that's Chris. That's Chris Pope. He's a Space Pope over at. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Yeah, Chris Pope that I used to do podcasts with, and he's working with the guys that are making whatever that is. It's the Star Quest remakes that they're doing. I forget what the name of it is. And he's actually like their project manager now. But since his name is Pope, they call him Space Pope.
He's in Space Pope.
Yeah.
You should have a Space Pope.
I know, totally. Brian, you were on a show with him one time because I had him on my show and you came on. And that was Chris we were talking about that night. But anyway.
Are you sure?
Yeah, sure? I'm positive. I'll send you the MP3.
I wasn't drunk.
That might be.
I'm not remembering this. Yeah.
So, well, anyway, secret cow level. It's in. Thanks. Oh, so
confirmed.
I appreciate the
We're not confirmed. Or not confirmed.
Cult of the cow, Killius says in the... In the chat,
oh, yeah, the cow cult.
Or the bovine brethren. this game. I gotta say, guys, even this early version of the game is just so promising. It really is.
Now, means a lot to hear. Not too many people have seen it so far, so it's great that
you have the only publicly public play footage of anyone anywhere.
That's awesome.
Oh, I'm super giddy.
I'm totally feeling privileged over here now. That's great.
Totally. Oh my god. So, are you guys gonna do a Kickstarter? Are you gonna early access this thing on Steam? I mean, what's the plan?
Nope. No Kickstarter. No early access. We're just gonna finish it and put it out.
You should just Kickstarter for $1. Just be like, yeah, we had a Kickstarter, $1. All right, we're done.
Yeah, but then we'd have to fulfill some like pledges, you know, like make posters or something.
Well, no, yeah, then
they already said they're feeling too lazy for anything like that. So
well, make it like what's Star Citizen up
to
now?
Just do the potato
like
salad,
60
one,
million,
you know?
Right? So you just be like, okay, well, if we make more money than Star Citizen, then
yeah,
we'll give you T-shirts. Yeah.
No, you just make outrageous.
I personally do not want to be saddled with $60 million worth of expectations.
Oh, God. No, right?
Yeah.
No, what you do is you make tiers with different ridiculous things. Like, if you donate $5, you get a towel in the game. If you donate $10, you get a fish tank in your ship.
It's like the potato salad Kickstarter all over again, man. Yeah.
Oh, you know, you
make
could...
the best potato salad.
Actually, those were Star Citizen stretch goals. I wasn't even making.
I remember the towel and the fishbowl. Yeah, they were for your bunk room or whatever.
Your hangar,
right? Your hangar.
Hangar. Yes, I'm not even making those up.
Uh-oh, something very bad is going on over here. So this level was red.
Oh, this is a merchant.
Uh-oh.
So if you go left, oh yeah, they're attacking a merchant. See, the blue one's a merchant.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So. Ooh, that's a beam.
There he goes. Nasty. They're beating the crap out of him.
Oh, you guys are ahead of me even. I'm not
seeing
that at all.
Yeah, they murdered Merchant, like, instantly.
Oh, he just blew him away.
Yeah, but this guy has, like, a big green beam laser. Oh,
ooh,
crap,
he
just blew the... Oh, wait till you see that. I won't even spoil it.
I ran into one of those earlier.
Watch close, Brian. Right.
Okay. Oh, Jesus Christ. Whoa!
Here it comes.
Oh, kabloo. There went several asteroids all at once.
Oh, gosh.
That's awesome.
Oh, it's so amazing.
Wow, I need to get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to get
two of those.
I'm going to get an express ride back home.
I love how you can slice through the asteroids with a beam weapon like that.
That is crazy.
That's what you do with the mining lasers. Oh, so when you get a mining laser, you explicitly use them that way to slice up the asteroids.
Well, how about this? I'm going to go mining with these guys. I'll just make them blow the asteroids
up. Yeah, just go behind asteroids until they blow them up for you. That's a good strategy.
But can the mining laser also be used as a weapon?
It can, but it's not a great weapon. The mining laser itself will blow up asteroids a lot faster, and I think you get a better yield of loot if you use a mining laser. But I don't think it hurts shields much at all, so you can use it on hulls.
Damn. Yeah, the combat gets really frantic, which is
great. And these are so small. You got to see the big ones. These are really small, small battles. When you get the ones that have the really large cruisers and a bunch of secondary ships and a bunch of fighters, those are pretty cool.
Now, can we see that in this version, or do we have to wait?
Yeah, if you get far enough, once you get to the Red Devil missions a little bit later, you'll start getting to destroyers, which usually have a couple of corvettes with them. And then when you get to like the military, you have missions where you can assault the military. Once you get to some of those, they'll have bigger, and the Border War mission has just a silly amount of objects in it.
It's probably quicker to get back to base to let this guy kill me, so I'm going to come up here and just be stupid. See if I
If you get up really close to him, sometimes it's easier because the beam weapons, they can't get a good bead on you. They'll do like a little corner slice and.
No, he's got a pretty good bead. I can't even get his shields down. Oh, there he goes.
If you can get close enough and you can fan him fast, yeah, you're taking him out. You can do it.
That didn't happen.
Oh, deflector up! Deflector
so close.
Up, man.
So close.
Oh, did you just blow up?
Yeah.
I'm a few seconds ahead.
Yeah, you're a little bit behind
you still. But yeah, you got him on fire.
Yeah, I know. I got close. He was
almost
like three quarters down.
Oh, kaboom.
And then he turned inside of me.
Ooh, that doesn't look good at all, Jim.
Bits of you floating away.
It was tight for a while there.
Yes.
Oh, he rammed into you. Damn. Ooh.
See, that's the thing. When the AI plays stuff like that, I don't know if it's just taking a random action or it's really that smart. Yeah, I can't tell.
Oh, so, it's very smart. It's the smartest AI that anyone's ever made for a space game ever.
Yeah.
Just perfect.
Some of
it's random and some of it is on purpose. You know, sometimes they'll just make turns that just turn out to be like, oh, you bastard. Why did you do that right then? And sometimes it really is on purpose. I mean, they do try and get away. They use their deflectors on purpose to protect wounded sides, and they do a peel-off turn if they're starting to get wounded through the armor in order to hopefully protect it for a while.
Right, and he turned the
They've got some vocal cues there. That go with some of those. Yeah, well, a lot of it gets down to they try and turn so that they won't hit you, which a lot of times just works out to they're going to peel away and they're going to reverse sides.
Right.
It just kind of works out that way.
Because if he would have turned left, then I would have continued to drill that side, even though he would have been turning away from me. So him turning into me was actually the more expedient way to get me to shoot the other side. So that's what I was saying is like, I don't know if the AI was really that smart or it just happened, but the fact that I can't tell is good enough for me. So I don't know. Have you guys ever talked to Chris Park over at Arson Games?
No, I don't think
He's got some really super posts about AI and how he does stuff in his games. Right.
Yeah.
Because he had AI War was one of the first ones that he did, which, you know, he made for, God, what, 10 years he's been working
on
it. Thing.
It's right there in the name.
Yeah.
The Last Federation, right?
Same guy.
So the deal with AI War is he's basically talking about how he faked the AI. And it's like instead of having an AI, like, you know, if you play Civilization and you expect that the AI is going to follow the same rules as the player versus you set the AI up to do things so it's entertaining to the player and it fakes looking like a human, but it doesn't really have to follow all the rules, but it doesn't break the rules so obviously that somebody points the finger and goes, ah, I see you cheating there.
Yeah.
So
yeah. But you can give them access to information that, you know, they wouldn't otherwise have, you know, that allows them to make a choice that's smarter than a human would be able to make based on the given data, but it's really kind of like leveling the playing field because they're obviously more retarded in almost every other way.
Right, and the best AI that I ever coded was like it just looked at you and ran straight at you screaming, you know, like the guys with the bombs and serious
works fine
amps.
For Doom, man.
Yeah, so that's all I got. And
yeah, I usually like to call them behaviors instead of AIs. We rarely are trying to analyze what you're doing or anything. We just put a bunch of behaviors on the enemies, and it looks like they're doing something smart.
Right.
Well, if at least it looks like they pay attention to what you do, it's a lot of it. Like, some of the later ships have flak cannons, and if you fire missiles at them, they use flak cannons. You're like, you bastard, you've got flak cannons. And it's not like they're just popping them off all the time. They do it when you shoot missiles at them, and the missiles get nearby, which isn't really that complicated to do, but just the fact that they do it makes them seem smarter. I don't know, just making them reactive is 70% of it.
As long as the player, like, gets lost in that suspension of disbelief and that isn't broken, you win.
Yeah, if you swear at him, it worked. As long as it's the right kind of swearing. It's not like this broken game. It's more like a you bastard kind of swearing.
Exactly. Like, you son of a bitch, I hate you. That's what you want. Not this fucking game.
Exactly. That's the distinction.
Yep.
Like, I've been running into that with TIE Fighter lately, and it's so frustrating when you run into that sort of thing.
Oh, my God. That game is so hard, but I love it.
I love it too, but after a while, you're like, fuck you, game. There's no reason for this game. There's no reason I shouldn't have wingmen right now.
Dude, that's another thing you have to do. You have to build in a mission where there's space bombs, and they're coming at that escort ship that you can't let you kill, and you have to hunt the bombs down and kill. Oh, my God.
Well, not until we put, like, three early missions where you inspect 400 containers.
Oh, God.
I gotta get that mission in there, because if I can't inspect laboriously a bunch of containers for, like, really, really boring components,
I just laughed so hard I got dizzy. And I gotta tell you something funny. I do these Let's Plays of TIE Fighter, and I'm like, oh, it might be funny to bring in my girlfriend who has never played these games before and see what her reaction is, see if it's funny. And I got a mission that was almost entirely inspecting containers.
Like, Alliance was the worst, man. X-Wing Alliance. The whole first trader, you're like, we're doing the family business, and you just go into acres of cargo containers.
I think you've actually heard our podcast about that.
Slowly inspected 30 of them, then the ship comes up, and if you mess up, you got to do the whole intro preamble again. Oh my God.
Yes.
Oh, fuck Alliance.
Yes, indeed.
I love X-Wing Alliance, but all of my memories of X-Wing Alliance are post inspection of crates.
Jim and I, because of Jim, used a cheat to get past those missions, because we were like, oh, God, fuck this. I can't even take it anymore. I don't want to inspect another. No, I'm done flying the YT-13.
You know, Brian was doing so good. He hadn't dropped an F-bomb the whole podcast until he starts talking about TIE Fighter. And now, wow. So what,
fucking,
you know,
infuriating.
You know, the one thing that you could actually do to, because it would be hilarious to put that mission in there, like, just laser once, beam. Right? Is you put the I bought some lasers because pew pew. I get my shields on. So you put the cargo mission in there, right? Where you have like 1,000 containers, shit. And it's like you must inspect all the containers, and then if you just go in there and shoot them all, then it's like, all right, good enough, and you still get paid. So.
No. They should actually just ask you to inspect the containers, and then you just go back and they say, did you inspect the containers? And you just say yes.
Yes!
And it's just like, there's going to be some poor bastard who inspected all the containers, but you can just go back and say yes. They don't have a way to check, man.
I love it. I would also love, like, you shot one container, it's like, whoops, it sets off a chain reaction, and they all just go up. It's like, yeah, I inspected them. Sure. And I inspected them with my guns.
that would be the way to solve it. Just have like a zillion containers and be like, you must inspect them all. But if you shoot one, they just all chain react and they're gone. But
gateway to piracy.
Exactly. And then you're like wanted forever by. So, hey, if you, speaking of piracy and stuff, if you're out like tearing stuff up and you're the scourge of space and you go in and read the news board, are they talking about you?
Not yet, but it'd be cool.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. And will you have the police hunting you and shit, and the military hunting you and shit?
If you piss off the military, yes. And the other thing I want to add is just bounty hunters, so that any faction can send bounty hunters after you if they hate you enough.
Really?
The idea, and this is not implemented yet, but the idea is that every time you check in with a station, that's like the ping to them to where you last were, and so they'll head that direction. So every time you dock at a station, you're basically setting off like a little ghost image for bounty hunters to track.
Oh man! Oh, so cool.
So the less times you dock at stations, yeah.
Oh, so like in so many games, when you dock at a space station, oh, I'm safe, I'm good. But nah, not in this game.
Well, they wouldn't come on the station, but it would be like just having done so. It's like
right,
saying,
but
it
like
man.
Limits. Like you can't. Oh, I don't. I just want to dock. I'm going to run away and dock. You don't always want to dock because then you'll be giving away where you are.
It'd be nice. I think it would be great if you had kind of like your bounty rating, which is like how much you're wanted for from one whatever faction. So per faction, you can see how much of a bounty they've got out on you. And that's, I mean, to a certain extent, it's like, it's yeah, I want you to have a bad bounty on me. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you could
how
do
much
it.
Money are you going to pay for me? Cool.
You could do it kind of like a Grand Theft Auto sort of thing where it's like the longer
like the
you're
stars.
In there. Yeah, the stars, right? So you get to the point where you get enough stars and like Darth Vader's Super Star Destroyer comes in. That's like
it'd be
you're
cool
done.
To feed that into like an intimidation thing for conversations too. If you've got a really heavy bounty
ooh.
From that faction, then when you talk to them, you have like an intimidation option. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that would that's be a, pretty that's, neat.
That's, I don't want to write too many checks my ass can't cash, but that sounds really cool.
So, or even just even and not even in conversation. Like if you approach a ship and so you have a reputation, the ship will be like, "Oh God, here's my cargo. Don't kill me."
Yeah, well, they can already surrender if they're scared from you. They will. They do have surrender options.
Ooh, nice,
now, where they'll
nice.
Hail you and say, "Just leave me alone."
Yay!
This might be the privateer equivalent that I actually finish. I couldn't finish privateer; it killed me. But but yeah, I mean, that's all pretty cool. So whenever people pitch features like that, or you guys are sitting around and figure, you know, like, hey, let's do this, let's add this crazy thing. Hey, let's put the cow level in. As the dual proprietors of this thing, are you thinking about like? Okay, well, it's going to take X hours to put that in, which is going to be this many dollars, which means we need to sell this many more copies, kind of, you know,
mostly
is the math
just
going on?
In terms of time, because you've got, like, time that we've got mapped out that we want to be done in, uh-huh. and mm-hmm. does this make sense to do in that time? I mean, there's lots of push and pull on this stuff. It's hard to be too precise with any planning for anything, honestly.
Yeah.
Because everything you get hung up on some stupid little problem and it takes you 4 days and you expected it to take 2 hours and then something you expected to take a week you got done in a day. You
right.
just you guess at it.
Because it's a
so a lot
thing.
Of these it's like how much will this add across as many systems as possible? So anything we do with like making the faction and conversations and how ships react to you do more stuff mm-hmm. is like an obvious win because it makes the whole game better all the way through, right?
Right.
Something like a cow level is super cool, but it's like the one little thing. And those are really valuable, especially if they're super memorable. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it is like, well, how many things is this spread across to make it super useful? So
right.
systemic stuff is the best stuff for us. And it's what we always look at the most.
We love little cool ideas, though. And we take little detours oh, yeah. and make fun things happen in the middle of bigger systems all the time.
Yeah.
Just depends on how we feel that day sometimes.
And 50% of the time it's just accidental. Just some weird things happen or you're up too late or something. This would be really cool if, and then you just do it real quick and you're like, yeah, let's keep it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Whoa. So you said you had a planned time frame of when you want this done. What is that?
I'm not going to say. It's going to be in 2015, but we've learned too much in the past never to say even a month.
Oh.
It starts to calcify, and then people start to expect it around then. And
yeah, we do tend to get like a sense of entitlement. So
it's like, well, you mentioned this month, and so anyway, we're just gonna say 2015 because it will be out in 2015.
December 31st, 2015.
Hopefully
not. God, I hope not.
Hey, the first development on this is Diablo 1. Diablo 1 went gold on December 27th, so that was a brutal Christmas season. We don't want to do that again.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, God, yeah.
Ooh, look at those
and,
lasers.
You know, in a lot of ways, development on this, is I don't want to jinx anything, has gone very smoothly. You know, things just kind of go in, bang, bang, bang. I feel like we've got the core in here now so that you can kind of see how the game hangs together. And a lot of it's, you know, putting all the trimming on the tree.
Well, there's a lot more playability that's going on here than... some complete games that we've played. So I would say, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Thanks. It's Dark Star 1 really comes to mind.
I mean, it's easy to extrapolate out and said, well, if I had a lot more conversations and a lot more kinds of missions and a lot more different spaceships and more places to go and the economy was live, well, I mean, it's really easy to imagine that extension and to get a handle on how much it adds to the game if you do it. So since we already have a giant pile of spaceships that has to go in and a bunch of characters that need to be rigged and phonemed. And it's not a big deal to let you jump to other galaxies. I mean, I feel pretty confident that we're going to be able to make a pretty cool game that has plenty of stuff in it for like $20 and put it out there.
Oh, really? That's going to be the price point for this?
Probably right around in there. I mean, that's what we usually do. I mean, we haven't like announced any final price.
Wow.
But it's gonna be,
I thought this was
gonna not going to be. It's not going to be a $60 game. No.
Come on. Oh. You can get $60 out of me for this.
It could, but we could probably sell way more copies for less.
Well, that's true. So
yeah.
Have you found that that Steam, being the market economy of, you know, for PC games in general now, has it been kind of like the mobile space where it's just a race to the bottom and 99 cents? Or
no, I mean, we've kept all of our stuff, you know, historically on Steam at like $20, and we've tried to do something much, much better than what you would expect for a $20 game, so that people just don't feel any qualms about getting it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's generally what we've aimed to do. And I think we're trying to just do the same thing again. Let's make something that should hopefully be worth considerably more than $20.
Yeah.
So you have no problem just impulse buying the damn thing.
So what about if it does pretty well, right? Like, mm-hmm. I can't see this not doing well. But if it does pretty well, are you thinking about maybe extensibility, like throw some DLC out there? Or when you're done with it, you're on to the next thing?
I mean, to be honest, we haven't talked about it too much. Personally, I like to move on for lots of reasons. I just like the variety, for one thing.
Right.
You only got so much time in life, and I like to make as many new things as I possibly can. I'm not sure how Eric feels about it, and we haven't really talked about it too much. So.
Yeah, I generally agree. I there's so many directions this could go. I can imagine making systems for this for a long time, but we'll just see how it plays out.
I mean, usually my preference would be make this, do it upright, put it out. If people like it, great. Go do something else and then come back and do a sequel that does all the cool stuff that we wish we could have done that we didn't do and make a clean break of it. You know, that's more satisfying to me personally than I'm just going to add a bunch of little incremental things on here to kind of stretch it out even longer. Because I don't think it's going to be a short game. I mean, you guys have played for a couple hours and you haven't even gotten to the end of the...
feel like we've barely scratched the surface.
The piddly starting content, which I think is super, super conservative amount of content.
Really?
There's not that many spaceships in here. We've got... our end number is supposed to be like 60 or 70 different kinds, all spread across the races. I have two story missions in here right now, and there should be significantly more. And the actual random missions is a very, very tiny pile. You know, there's not that much in there, and it doesn't utilize all these other ships that have not been rigged up yet. You know, there's other weapons. There's so much junk that has to go in here. I mean, up till now, this first 7 months is all like, let's get all the systems working. Let's get the console builds working. Let's make sure everything streams right and it's stable and the control's good and everything works. Mm-hmm. And then it's all just keep cramming stuff in, you know, fill it out with all the stuff that takes advantage of those systems, which is kind of the point that we are now moving into.
Wow. So how do you guys work as far as the development stuff goes? Do you sit and actually map out a bunch of stuff on paper and then go do it? Or do you just like fire up, you know,
nope.
the editor and
we
start
just wing
banging.
It, man.
Yeah.
We just wing it. We just do stuff. We just wing it. Okay. And then we just change it all the time.
Yeah, because I've seen it done both ways, right, where people are kind of meticulous and it's like, yeah, this is the game and what we think we're going to do. And then they start to code that. And then I've also seen where people just like, you know, open up Visual Studio and see what happens. So,
I mean, it's not like an erratic kind of development. We've been doing this long enough that we know what we're doing and we know what we want to do. And you generally have a pretty mentally good idea of what you're trying to achieve and how you're going to do it. I don't personally like sitting around putting a bunch of stuff on paper because it always changes anyway, and then you just spend a lot of time putting stuff on paper. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have something that you can play and put in somebody's hands and say, well, do you like this? And watch what they do, and then respond. And that's the way that I like to develop. So, I don't see any reason to do it any other way because it works for me. So,
yeah. So, you know, and another thing that I kind of see appealing to people is, I mean, it's not multiplayer, right? But it's kind of like the single-player EVE Online that wouldn't irritate the crap out of me, you know? Because it's like, if EVE Online was this, but an MMO, I would be there every night, you know? But it's everything but this. So take that
well,
as you will.
Well, that's what Star Citizen said. And
yeah, you have a lead,
right?
Yeah, you have a lead in Star Citizen for that sort of thing.
Yeah, but Star Citizen's not going to be this kind of... you know, gamepad friendly third person, you know, happy game. It's going to be.
Don't really know yet. It definitely flies better with a gamepad than it does with a HOTUS.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Elite flights great with a gamepad. You know,
does it?
Elite, yeah, I've been using Elite with a gamepad, and it's really slick. It's really well done. Feels good.
Oh, cool. I'll try that then. Because they got
they can't quite get every control onto the gamepad, so you always have to use like J or whatever because they just couldn't cram it on there. But pretty slick.
That's a concession they had to make, right? Because nobody even sells joysticks anymore. It's not like you can go into Best Buy and actually find a joystick for sale. It's unfortunate.
It's kind of fascinating this comes up because I noticed when TIE Fighter and X-Wing came out on GOG a week or so ago, which is amazing.
Oh, here's the minefield. Oh.
So,
did you find one?
Yeah.
You did find one.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. So many people were asking, can I play this on a gamepad? Can I play this on a gamepad? And you can, but it's horribly difficult.
Yeah, it's not an optimal experience, that's for sure.
It's not ideal in the slightest.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, one thing that's really great visually here is you guys have an exceptional amount of trash in space.
Oh.
And it's not just little dots, that go by like particle crap. It's actually like space garbage from other ships that have been nuked. And it's obvious why it's there because, everybody's shooting everybody. So that's...
We're going to add even more garbage. Well, the main thing is that we want it to be so you can look off in the distance and you can see stuff and then you can go to it. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the things we wanted during warp, too. You're warping around and you're looking all over the place. You're like, oh, wait, no, I should stop there because there might be a thing. Just as of today, like if you go into minefields, there's almost always cargo containers that are left over. And they're big, like about half the size of your ship, and they have stuff in them and money.
Oh,
and
cool.
So you can salvage those.
So it makes it worth it to creep through the minefield.
Yeah. And you can ping them with your pulse and say, oh, well, there's purple stuff over there, so I want to go over there and look for cargo. So the more stuff we can add in there to lead you off into these side things to go find stuff, we have ideas of other stuff that we want you to go find. And ideally, that's another point to like the being able to harvest the resources. Like, oh, that looks like a very promising nebula. I'm going to fly over there and see if I could set up a nebula harvester or whatever. We'll come up with some cool name for that, right? Space crab pot.
I think I just saw a purple thing, Jim. At your 8 o'clock.
Not in this build. Not in this build.
Oh, I thought I saw one.
I did, like literally an hour ago that finished, so.
I haven't even seen them yet.
Yep. Today they went in.
Well, gentlemen, we've been talking for almost 2 hours. We should probably wrap this up.
Yeah.
Thanks a ton for having us on, man.
Oh, it has been a pleasure, and we got some good response from the chat room today, which is unusual for us. We're kind of a small gig, so it's nice to see the interest.
Well, when we have actual superstars on, you see. Then,
it's true. Oh, yes.
Superstars.
Yeah. Wait, are they coming on next?
After us.
No, that was Chris Roberts. It was episode 4.
And, oh, God.
Well, you want to talk about a mess, because it's like that's the fourth show, right? And we've got, like, Space Jesus on and trying to, like, get our shit together, right?
I couldn't even talk. I had the worst cough, and I couldn't even fucking say anything without coughing my ass off. And so Jim pretty much did the whole show. That was a good time. Anyway. Travis and Eric, I want to thank you so much for joining us. This has been a pleasure. And guys, this game, holy shit. It is.
Thank you very much.
It is the stuff.
Enjoyable to talk to you guys, too. Thanks a lot.
Oh, it is fun. And we'll try and follow up, like, maybe after it's released. We can do this, like, post-mortem thing or something. Cause
that sounds good.
Mortem sounds bad, but.
Oh, okay, yeah. Post-happiness. Post-joy. Post-fun.
Post-toasties. What?
But, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you for watching, everyone, and thank you for listening. And again, as I always say this, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic, please hit us up at hail@spacegamejunkie.com. Thanks again for listening. And on behalf of everyone here, have a great day or night.
Yep, and it's Veterans Day, so I wanted to say happy Veterans Day. To all the Space Marines,
you, Jim. You were a veteran.
Yeah, well, I was.
Thank
you. Land, sea, air, and space, wherever you served.
Yes.
Awesome.
Thank you.
So.
Thank you very much.
All right, man.
Get it.
Good night.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler. Sure thing. stand down, but I see only one. Try to think I'm over you. I find I'm just begun. The years move faster than the days. There's no warmth in the light. And how I miss those desert skies.